Today's final case will be Techmeyer against the Operating Engineers Pension Trust.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The issue in this case is whether the District Court correctly upheld Midwest Operating Engineers Pension Plan's decision to refuse to consider Techmeyer's original application for disability, and whether it was correct in holding that Midwest did not breach its fiduciary duty owed to Mr. Techmeyer. As the record clearly demonstrates, Alan Techmeyer suffered an injury in July of 2001 that rendered him permanently disabled. By misleading Techmeyer about the consequences of putting his disability application on hold, Midwest prevented Techmeyer from receiving
the... How was he misled? What false statement was made to him?
I don't know that there was a... he was told to put his application on hold, to request in writing. He was submitted a letter on May 2nd, 2002, indicating that he had until June 14th, 2002 to submit medical documentation of his disability. That June 12th, 2002 was more than 180 days after his original application, indicating that he was put on hold. He was not told that by requesting that his application be put on hold, that he would be forced to reapply. And that, in essence, was a misleading statement.
Now, let's come back. What statement was misleading? Or is it simply, in your view, that the pension fund should spontaneously have given him advice about the consequences of his decisions?
It's my view that if by putting his application on hold was viewed by the pension plan based on the action they took, that it was withdrawn, he should have been informed of that. By telling him to submit in writing that he put his application on hold and then continuing to request medical documentation pursuant to that application, they are suggesting that his application remains valid and that in July, when he calls to find out the status of his application, they're told that he's told that he needs to reapply. By failing to inform Techmeyer that he did need to reapply for benefits when he requested that his application on hold,
well, you're thinking, could I ask a question?
Sure.
I don't understand the huge disparity in the premium. If he didn't apply, if he didn't go back to the original date when he then withdrew it or put it on hold or whatever, it's more than doubles his premium. I don't exactly understand that.
Judge, it's my understanding.
Is that a penalty, or is that just because of a certain actuarial table, or what?
The premium rate is based on the yearly quote, is my understanding.
Yearly so what?
The yearly, it's established on a yearly basis. So my understanding is that January 1st, 2002, the rate was increased to $537 a month. His original application was in November of 2001, putting him at $237, I believe.
It
would have locked in at that rate?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's my question.
Furthermore, the district court's finding that Techmeyer's claim was deemed denied because more than 180 days lapsed since his original application was also in error. It violates the ERISA regulations found in 29 CFR 2560 and this court's ruling in Halpin v. Granger requiring specific reasons for denial. By forcing Techmeyer to reapply rather than deem denial that they suggest, Techmeyer was prevented from appealing his decision. The information that he could have submitted on appeal is the exact information that the Midwest Operating Pension Fund found him disabled under. Finally, the record clearly indicates that Pettenauer was disabled pursuant to his original application. There's no indication that Pettenauer found...
You okay? Help him out.
How are you feeling, Mr. Carford?
I'm a little dizzy, Your Honor.
Didn't have his usual hearty breakfast this morning.
I thought he usually munched on other attorneys. Mr. Carford, why don't you just take this as the opportunity to recess your oral argument and see how you're feeling after a while?
Thanks, Judge.
Ms. Chapman.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Catherine Chapman, and I represent the Midwest Operating Engineers Pension Trust Fund. Mr. Techtmeyer, in November of 2001, was faced with a decision. He had learned that the rates for the welfare plan were going to go up significantly on January 1, 2002. Since he was disabled, he had to decide whether he should apply.
How far in advance was this change announced?
I believe it was a few months before January 1, 2002. So he had to make a decision. Should he apply for his pension disability benefit prior to January 1, 2002 and lock in the welfare rate that he would want, or should he continue with a benefit he was already receiving, which was frankly a better benefit, that would continue through July of 2002 and then apply for the pension? If he did that, then he would have to pay a higher benefit rate in July of 2002. So it was a difficult decision. Mr. Techtmeyer, in November of 2001, sent in an application for the pension disability benefit. The pension fund started to process the claim. In February 2002, before a decision was made by the trustees, Mr. Techtmeyer sent a letter or note to the trust fund and said, "I would like to place my application on hold. My situation is uncertain." And it was uncertain. He had suffered from a back injury on the job, and he needed surgery, or he was going to have surgery. In, I believe, May of 2002, Mr. Techtmeyer did have surgery. After he exhausted the benefit that he had already been receiving, in July of 2002, he sent in another application for the pension disability benefit.
Now, was that one, a one-year benefit?
Yes, the first benefit lasted 1 year.
Was that a disability or a temporary disability benefit?
It was a temporary disability benefit provided by the welfare plan.
And if he had applied and received the permanent disability benefit, whatever, there would have been less per month, I suppose, or some, you say it would be a lesser benefit, but for a long duration.
That's correct.
And he was fully aware of this, I guess, dilemma, you're saying?
Yes.
He knew the higher premium was coming, but he would also lose the interim one. Now, when he was put on hold,
yes.
Is there such a thing?
No.
Well, how did they put him on hold if there isn't such a thing?
The fund did not put him on hold.
He asked to be put on hold, and the fund did what?
They stopped processing the application. Normally what would happen is his request for a pension disability or a disability pension is that the request would go to the trustees of the fringe benefit funds. They would review the medical information, and then they would decide whether it appeared he qualified.
Well, they didn't do any of that. They just assumed that the putting on hold was a withdrawal of the...
That the application had been stopped. And that made sense in light of the fact that he was having surgery in May. As the district court had mentioned, it's difficult to find that an injury is permanent when surgery is pending. You may think it might not help, but before surgery is done, usually it's unclear whether someone is going to be permanently disabled or not. In July, the trustees of the fringe benefit funds reviewed the application, the medical documentation that had been submitted from the surgery that had occurred over the past year, and granted Mr. Techmeyer permanent disability pension. Under the terms of the plan, a pension begins the first day of the month after an application is received. So the date that a person becomes disabled is not the relevant inquiry. The date that they submit their application is the relevant inquiry. So pursuant to that term of the plan, Mr. Techmeyer received...
Is this all plainly stated in the summary plan description?
That the first day of a pension would be the following month of the application?
That and the interaction between that timing issue and the price that's going to be paid for ongoing health benefits.
I believe that it is not in the SPD. I believe it is in the pension plan. I'm sorry. Mr. Techmeyer, after receiving the pension in August, appealed and asked that his pension begin in December of 2001 so that he could take advantage of the better health and welfare rate. The trustees looked at the review and decided, in light of the fact that he had himself asked that the pension application be put on hold and that he did have surgery in the interim, they decided to rely on the July application as opposed to the earlier November application. And then Mr. Techmeyer went through the entire process, appealed again, and the trustees came to the same decision. Subsequent to the decision, and it was clear in the decision and it is clear in the plan that it is considered final, the Social Security Administration found that Mr. Techmeyer was disabled also. They found that his disability date preceded both of the application dates. And as a consequence, Mr. Techmeyer asked that the trustees reopen the appeal process and consider the decision.
Now, was the Social Security decision after the operation?
Yes.
And I assume the operation didn't work.
No.
And so they could go back before that, knowing what they know now, that didn't work, and before that he had this disability.
Exactly.
He must have been anticipating that this operation might cure it.
Well, I don't know what he was anticipating, but he did go ahead with the operation. And the Social Security Administration did reconsider a previous decision where they had also found that he was not disabled. And then in January of 2002, they found that he was disabled. The point for our review panel, though, is not when he became disabled. It was when he applied. So, one, they don't want to open the review process because they take a lot of care in putting the plan documents together and saying once a decision is done, it's done. And two, the decision wouldn't have had an impact on when his disability began anyway. The district court found that the trustee's decision was reasonable and based on the plan documents and the documents in front of them. This is the appropriate standard because the plan does provide the trustees with the authority to interpret their own plan. The district court found it was reasonable not to reopen the appeal process based on the plan documents. And the trustees found that there was no breach of fiduciary duty to Mr. Techmeyer. The trustees had not misled Mr. Techmeyer through an incomplete plan or incomplete SPB. The trustees were not aware of any misrepresentations to Mr. Techmeyer. And under the Seventh Circuit decision, Schmidt, the court found that the actions in this case did not rise to the level of a breach of fiduciary duty to Mr. Techmeyer.
I assume the reason after the there was no notice of denial or anything sent because it was intercepted by this request to put it on hold, which they treated as a withdrawal.
That's correct. And although I noticed that the Mr. Techmeyer had argued that he was deprived of the opportunity to appeal the first application or the fact that he didn't get a pension based on the first application. And actually, the trust documents do provide that if the trustees do not respond to your application within 90 days, you should deem it denied an appeal. It does provide for that circumstance. The district court also found that a summary plan description does not need to include discrete situations, as in this case. That's not the purpose of an SPD. And the pension plan respectfully requests.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman.
I'm sorry. Pardon me?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Carford, how are you now?
Judge, I'm going to try to do this stuff falling down.
Okay. I mean, we can, if need be, you can do it from your chair if you're still feeling a little dizzy. And
I'm fine. I apologize, Ms. Court. I'm more than a little embarrassed.
Shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's not a question of apology or embarrassment. It's just a question of the vigorous cross-examination you received from Judge Mannion causing adverse effects.
And I have a broken leg, too, so.
Okay.
Regarding the request to put on hold, I would like to emphasize this court's ruling in Bowerman. In Bowerman, a ministerial employee informed another employee that she would not need to apply for COBRA benefits. Because of telling her that she didn't need to apply, a gap in coverage resulted, and she wasn't covered under the plan. This court held that because the plan document did not adequately describe such procedures, and due to the misinformation given to the employee, that Walmart breached their fiduciary duty. In this case, the plan, while it does say that within 90 or 180 days your claim is deemed denied, it does not have any clause regarding reapplication. By telling Techmeyer that he to request to put his application on hold, to subsequently allow a time period for which he could submit medical evidence beyond the 180 days in which his claim, according to the plan, must be denied, and then to inform him upon his request that additional information be set that he needs to reapply, Midwest breached its fiduciary duty.
Well, did that have anything to do with that one-year plan to getting additional information? Because that was still that period, wasn't it?
I'm not sure I understand.
When he put it on hold,
correct.
He was still under the umbrella of that other disability, right? The 1 year?
Yes, he was still receiving benefits, but he was also under his original application, which locks in the lower premium.
Okay, I'm not quite sure about the overlap and when what benefits come. He had that application hadn't been approved, obviously. So he's still receiving under this one-year disability plan, whatever it is, gets a higher...
Correct, Judge. And the two plans actually account for that. There's an offset provision, so that if you are receiving benefits under both plans, the higher benefits, the lower benefits, subtracted from that amount. I'd also like to go back to the 180 days provision, and this is in essence where the real problem occurs. By making him reapply and holding that the 180 days deems denial, they're not affording him any ERISA protection. And the second application, which was submitted in July, they find him completely disabled. Had he been afforded the right to appeal his initial decision, all of that evidence would have been brought in on appeal. So in essence, by eliminating this appeal, they're closing basically the record for what they're going to consider, which regularly would have been considered had his claim properly been denied. There is no indication in the record anywhere that Mr. Tetmeyer requested that his application be withdrawn. Finally, regarding the Social Security Administration decision, that decision was submitted before litigation to the plan administrator. And
what significance does it have in your view? The question is not whether Tetmeyer is disabled, but on which application is he credited as being disabled? And I don't see how the Social Security Administration's decision bears on that question.
Well, Judge, I would answer that by saying that when Tetmeyer appealed their decision to not consider his first application, the plan said there was no evidence that he was disabled pursuant to his original application. Regardless of the medical evidence, and it does clearly show that he was disabled, the Social Security confirms that, finding him disabled as of July 12th, the date of his injury. As such, there is no evidence supporting Midwest's refusal to consider his original application and Midwest breaches fiduciary duty. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Conford. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.
Thank you.